Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Going electric? Go really electric with an EV or plug-in hybrid from the Kia e-range.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
The first call was from Mary, who you could hear her two children in the background. She works from home and in the home as well, if you follow me. They had to pin in their collar to pay the creche fees, 1,645, which is just €200 less than her take-home pay after tax each month, believe it or not. And her child was sent home today again because they had a runny nose, and she's asking for more clarity. But Joan O'Sullivan, you're a creche owner, and a runny nose is a reason to run the child home.
Hi, Joe. Yes, in my instance, it was. We had notified parents with Delta coming into autumn that we would ask them if children had runny noses not to come in. And we had one instance, not the fault of the parent, where the child came in the morning, was quite healthy, but developed a runny nose during the morning, and we phoned the parent, and the parent collected the child, and the child subsequently tested positive. Mm-hmm.
So how many many children are down each day because of runny noses? Not in
nationally?
No, in your creche.
Oh, we wouldn't have somebody down every day with a runny nose.
Okay, I thought runny noses were fairly common. And
they are. Well, I mean, it's been a fairly mild summer, and I'm keeping my fingers crossed because I have absolute sympathy for parents. I don't know how they or us are going to manage this winter. Last year, certainly with ourselves, we were predominantly outdoors, and we had an extraordinarily healthy bunch of children with nothing mm-hmm. going on with any of them. And we're going to try and do the same thing. I think lots of creche owners are going to do that this year. Because what the situation we had quite recently when that happened was that 10 children had to miss a full week of creche because they were close contacts.
Yeah.
And that's an absolute nightmare situation for a parent, especially because that's just one instance. So all it takes is one other child to pick something up, and, you know, possibly the same group of children could be out again. It's a total nightmare. And my staff were allowed to come in because they had been vaccinated. So they were not considered in need of quarantining. So they could be in, but the children couldn't.
And what about the statement then on Saturday on the Brenner Kionini Callig, an infectious disease consultant at St James? She said most children under the age of 12 are going to be infected by COVID by spring.
I totally agreed with her. And then I heard Paul Reid about an
hour later
on Radio 1, and he rejected that. And I totally agreed with her. I feel we're heading to a time where children are not going to be even tested if they're close contacts. And I do agree with her. I can't see a situation where even those of us who are vaccinated are not going to catch COVID this winter. But by the sounds of things, from other creche owners that I've spoken to, this seems to be happening everywhere. Primary schools, it's happening everywhere. I think we're all terribly worried. And but maybe what's going to happen is the close contacts won't be home, so parents won't be sent home, so parents will be able to go to work.
Yeah, but there's one statement there from a member in EFFIT saying forcing COVID-19 close contact children out of school is probably unnecessary. But stay there for a sec. Sarah, you've a son who's 7. He's in a special school.
Yeah, can you hear me, Joe?
Loud and clear, yes.
They never mention, the routine that's broken for special needs kids, you know. Mm-hmm. My son is 7, and it took me a long time, first of all, to get him in a special school, because it's absolutely terrible to get, to secure a place for your child. Once you have a diagnosis for your child, it took me forever. Mm-hmm. And from February to between May, he's gone for a test 4 times he coughed. Once he coughed in class, and then the other time he coughed on the bus to school. But he never coughed at home, and every time the test came back negative. But again, the routine is gone. He has to stay home for a second test for 10 days.
Wow, but you're saying now, between February and May, Sarah, your son was sent home from school for, 10 days at a go?
Kind of, pretty much. The first time I said, I'm not going to wait for the HSC. We went private. That was very pricey, you know?
Yeah, of course.
But then that one was fine. But then for the next one, the school said, oh, no, he coughed in class. I knew, Joe. I know my kids. I would never say my kids sick to school, you know. And then again, they're in a smaller class. There's only 4-5 kids in class, you know. Okay. So I think that's something to be looked to take in consideration as well, because for all of us as parents, this is very frustrating. Like, his routine is going down the drain now.
It's a very, very good point.
You know, and I can't, there's only so much I can do as a mother. I have other kids at home as well. So I don't know, is it the case of getting them to wear a mask or give another chance and see if the child is really coughing, or was it just like, you know, something, I don't know, you know.
4 times up to 10 days ago at a duration each time. Four times between February and May. Wow.
Yeah. And another one now, he's at home right now. He was home on Friday.
Oh, was he okay?
You know, he's fine. Yeah, the first test is negative. He's happy here, you know.
But is he now going to have to stay home for 10 days?
He has, yeah. He's not back until the 22nd, I think, the principal said.
But you've just told me he's got a negative test.
Yeah, but I got a text from the HSC saying he still needs to stay at home, wait for a second test, which I think is ridiculous. He doesn't have any symptom. He's not coughing. He's nothing, you know. Yeah. This time was, I think it's because one of the kids was a close contact and he was sent home. The whole class is at home at the moment, you know.
Wow. But Joan, you say you're not experiencing that in your creche.
No, Joe, I said I don't have children out every day with runny nose. But certainly what you've just explained there, look, I don't know how many tests I've had in the past year, but I've certainly had at least 5 in myself and all my staff every time that any of us feel unwell. Because to be honest, Joe, we are terrified of catching COVID and passing it to the children and passing it back to their families. So I hear what that lady said about the special school, but I can only imagine that the teachers are trying to do their best. I imagine that they are. They're trying to keep COVID out, and if it comes in, they're trying to prevent it from spreading. We don't have the magic bullet answer.
Okay. Thanks indeed. No, for the time being, it's more Norma. Sarah and Joan, Sarah there minding her 7-year-old child. Kind regards to all. We'll stick to cost of living, which Mary raised. She pays her monthly wage less 200 quid take home after tax, pays for the creche. 200 quid less 200 quid a monthly wage goes on the creche. Louise Reeves, okay, prices again. Louise, you've been travelling around staycation. I was mentioning the price of petrol. Give us examples.
Well, see, no, I wasn't talking about the price of petrol. I was talking.
I know that. I was just at the cost of living.
Right. Well, it's believe it or not, it's quite expensive to be vegetarian or vegan if you're going on the staycation,
okay.
And it is very, very difficult to get something good to eat, even in a very good high quality restaurant. Even if you've had booked a table and you have flagged it with them in advance that you have a dietary requirement. And you'd arrive and something might be just mixed up on the last previous 5 minutes, you know.
So tell me, give me a few examples. A bowl of polenta.
A bowl of polenta is right. A very watery polenta with a bit of pepper in it. €5.
Polenta is made from what? Flour?
Cheap of chips. It's like maize.
Okay. And what's the consistency of it?
Well, you can get it as looking like maybe like a rice type, or it can be. It's very smooth, very smooth.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it tasty?
I don't particularly like it myself, but when I'm stuck, I will have it.
Okay, so a bowl of polenta.
Mhm.
And is there much preparation in polenta?
No, very
little. Okay. A bowl of polenta.
Well, is there much preparation in making a bowl of rice?
So that's no preparation.
Exactly.
You can do that in the microwave. And a tiny bit of stuffed peppers.
Tiny. So small that nearly you wouldn't see it.
So that was 25 quid.
€25.
A bowl of rice and cauliflower.
Oh, yeah. That's a bowl of rice. Well, riced cauliflower, €18.
Oh, God. And do you ask? I know restaurants have overheads and...
I understand that completely, but I think there's, because of the fact that you're awkward, that's something to put on the extra prices.
It's because...
You have to do something extra with what they have on the menus.
Yeah,
you know,
saying, with a vegetarian or vegan option, it's not that hard to do, is it?
Well, I would have thought so. I would have thought so.
Now, you also... But by the way, on that question, do all restaurants offer vegetarian and vegan options now?
Well, No, they see very rarely will you see them on depending on the restaurant you go to, you know, depending. Mm-hmm. But very rarely will you see them. Or maybe there might be one Thai green curry or something like that, but really it's Thai green soup is what you get. And I mean, it's very limited, extremely limited.
Now, you also read, what was the, what you say? There was a review in the Irish Times.
Oh, yes.
Go ahead.
Certainly, there was. I won't mention the restaurant. I
do.
Every
restaurant deserves a bit of publicity. It's not bad.
No, I'm not going to mention the restaurant. Okay. But it was in the Irish Times. Okay. In the Irish Times. And the same chef, believe it or not, was mentioned again in this week's Irish Times as having come from that particular restaurant up to a restaurant in Dublin. And it did have vegan, the one down the country did have vegan, and it got 8.5 out of 10,
okay.
But it lost marks because it didn't have fluffy pillows. Now, the one in Dublin got 10 out of 10,
right.
But it had no vegan options at all. I would have thought it should have had
and
room
how do
for
you
improvement.
How do you know that?
Because it was said on the journalist wrote.
In the report, they don't have a vegan option.
No. But I would have thought it should have had room for improvement as opposed to 10 out of 10.
Okay. We spoke to the chef that you're of that restaurant you don't want to name.
Right.
Said the style of cooking here simply doesn't fit with a vegan eater. We've been closed for 18 months. It would be uneconomical for us and the client to have to start from scratch on an individual basis. We cater for allergies, pescatarians, vegetarians. It is simply a business model decision not to do a vegan option. I think they've two Michelin stars.
I know. I mean, I would have thought that. I know they may have two Michelin stars, but they're not really thinking outside of the box, because of environmental situations, there are going to be more and more vegans and vegetarians, and more and more requiring vegan or vegetarian options. I would have thought he would have, if he was really thinking about his business, that he would be thinking about having more vegan and vegetarian options.
And I suspect that restaurant's such a good reputation. I suspect they're booked out.
Almost probably, but
okay. Mm. But again, £25 for a bowl of polenta and a tiny bit of stuffed peppers you could hardly see, and £18.50 for a bowl of rice and a bit of cauliflower.
Yeah.
Okay, Louise. Well spotted. Well argued. Thanks indeed, Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Now, we've been doing it for well over a year, warning people about these ridiculous phone. We play the tape so many times. So you get this phone call and it's almost like a recording saying in a funny accent, this is revenue or social welfare and we're going to take you to court if we don't give us your details. Now, they're doing it so often that they are going to catch people. They are going to catch people. And unfortunately, one of the people they've caught is Susanna Hedrina, who's on the line now. And Susanna, you'll discover why she was caught, because she was, after finishing a night shift, she's a frontline worker. Susanna, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
I'm so sorry this has happened to you. How much did they steal on you?
€6,600.
Oh, my God. And how did they get you?
As you said, I was sleeping after night duty, and so I was receiving these phone calls, and previously I answered it only once.
Yeah, yeah.
And they said there is an issue with my in the tax office, something to do with me, but I obviously hung up the phone, and
done.
I ignored that. But the other day they rang me and I was sleeping after night duty. I answered the phone and it was, as you said, automatic message to hold and wait for the operator. And it was in a threatening matter saying that I have to wait for the operator because that's the last warning.
Okay.
For me, that my name came up in a criminal investigation.
Oh my God.
So I was brainless. I waited for the operator, mm-hmm. and they were. I have to say they were pros. Okay, they introduced themselves as officers.
Yeah.
And they gave me their badge numbers. The first one gave me my case number. He described the case. So he said my PPS number was involved in money laundering overseas. And there is €180,000 in my name already. In debt, I am €180,000. And there is arrest warrant issued on my name. And I am not to leave country under no circumstances.
And I just want to remind people, you come off and you're a staff nurse in the Mater, really busy, busy, great hospital, but busy hospital.
Yeah.
You come off night shift, you're wrecked, you're tired.
Yeah.
And you've seen these calls before, but different numbers come up at different times.
Yeah.
And it's very hard not to answer a number, it really is. And you picked it up. And how did they get you? How did they convince you to give them your bank details, Susanna?
So what happened was the first man was, now when I look back at it, when I even talk about it, it's so obvious it's scam. Mm. But at that time, I cannot get arrested because I will lose my job.
Uh-oh.
And then the second thought was how I supposed to go to Poland tomorrow. So I was like, what if I'm not allowed to leave the country? What am I going to do? So I started crying hysterically. So the first officer, so-called, he put me through another man. Yeah. And there was again the same story. He gave me his number, a badge number, the case number. And he proceeded. He was the good cop then.
Yeah.
He said, oh, don't worry. It's more like a stolen identity case.
Mm-hmm.
You are outstanding citizen. There is no problem with you. So we are going to protect you. In order to do that, we have to transfer all your funds into a safe wallet app.
Yeah.
So he basically talked me through how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
They got access to my phone via any desk app. So basically, he could operate my phone from his computer, I assume.
Yeah.
And he asked me to download that app. Then he asked me to download the Safe Wallet app. And then basically told me step by step how to transfer the money. And I did. Yeah.
And just listening, it was a perfect storm from their point of view that worked.
Yeah.
One, you were tired after the night shift.
Yeah.
Two, when they said you can't leave the country, they say that to everyone, but they didn't know that you have to go back, or you are going back to Poland.
Yeah,
so you panicked there.
Yes.
Three-dimensional criminal record.
Yeah.
And
then the other thing, they were so lucky, I live on my own, so there was no one to ask, hold on, who are you talking to?
And it does $6,600. It's an awful lot of money. Did they clear out your bank account?
Completely.
Oh,
They took everything from my current account. They asked me about every single account I had. So I don't know if you're aware, you can set up saving accounts on Revolut.
Yeah.
So they asked me to clear the Revolut saving accounts. And then transferred, that was €600 or so, and then put all the money from current account into the Revolut, and from Revolut they then sent the money. I mean, I did, because I was authorizing everything, but they were talking me through how to do it. So, and the plan was they will issue me with new PPS number, and the new PPS number I'm supposed to get the following day, with their letter about, recommendation letter that I was to bring to the bank and set up new account with the new PPS number, and they will send the money back then to my account. The reason they were doing it to not to alert the real criminals, he said, that I know that, that there is investigation overseas in money laundering.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Will you be able to go back to Poland tomorrow?
I am going, because I'm going to have mental breakdown otherwise. So I have to leave. I am going, like, my friend gave me money, so I'm going to go, yeah.
And Susanna, when did you come to Ireland?
14 years ago. I had actually anniversary on the September 3rd.
You remembered the date?
Yes.
And when you came here, what did you have or what were you coming to?
You won't believe it, but I had one bag. It wasn't even a suitcase. I had 60 euro in my pocket. Yeah. I had no English and one-way ticket.
And had you a qualification?
I did master's in Poland. I finished college and I am a teacher in Poland.
Okay, you did the master's in teaching, yeah.
Yeah, and so I... but as I said before, like, you shouldn't decide about your life when you're young and stupid.
So you decided. So you decided you want to become a staff nurse. You decided you want to become. How did you become a nurse?
So when I came over, I obviously didn't have any English. So I started working as a cleaner. Then I worked as a carer in nursing home. Then in the hospital, in National Rehabilitation Hospital, I worked for years as a carer. And then I decided that I want to be a nurse, so I went and as a mature student to college. Yeah.
But you still have to pay fees.
I did because I had a degree from Poland, so you're not entitled to any.
Oh, another university.
Yeah.
And how much were the fees?
7,000 a year.
And you what do you
kept? And I pay that because I really want to be a nurse. Yeah.
Well done. We're so lucky.
So I had obviously more savings then, and all the savings went towards my nursing degree.
Yeah. We're so lucky to have you as a country, and as far as I can say, you are part of the we.
Thank you.
I'm so sorry, Susanna, that they did. Please let it be a warning to other people. Don't answer the scam. Social welfare, never. No revenue, never. They never want your bank account details. And if they want them, remember, if they want them that badly, just hang up and they'll send you a letter. Because they must know your address. Of course they don't. So just say, send me a letter. Thanks very much. And they say, what's your address? And you say, sure, you have my address. Good luck. Bye-bye. And you're not being rude. But it's a warning to other people. They are so persistent. People are getting them 10, 12, 14 times. I think I got them one day, one weekend. But they're just banging on and they're just hoping that they get the perfect storm, that they'll get someone who's tired.
And they did
with you. And when you started crying, then they did good cop. They did put you onto someone else and said, well, actually, just we'll sort this out for you. Just give us your bank details.
Yeah. To the point they were saying, Mom, you seem very distressed. Please have a sip of water. Yeah.
Oh, God. Oh, they are so smart and devious.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, Susanna, safe. So how long will you go back to Poland for?
10 days.
Okay.
Yeah.
And have you many families still there?
Just my mother and my brother and now his wife, and they have little child.
Oh, okay.
Might have a little niece, so that's why I'm going. I need to just hug her because I haven't met her yet. You know?
Okay, well, thank you on the one hand for all the staff for the matter. 24/7, 365. You have to remember that in hospitals. You were on night shift when they caught you. Thank you for all your service. And I hope other people listen and listen carefully. Susanna, I wish you nothing but good luck in the future.
You.
How long since you've seen your mother?
Since the COVID. So I lost count now.
Okay, you'd be allowed to hug her.
Yes, I am looking forward to it.
Okay. That's Susanna Hedstrina. She works as a staff nurse in the Mater Hospital. Listen to that story. 60 euro in her pocket when she arrived from Poland 14 years ago, a master's in teaching, decided she wanted to become a nurse, worked as a carer, a cleaner, managed to get the money, put herself through college, 7,000 a year, and qualified last year as a staff nurse. What an incredible gift to this country. Thanks indeed, Susanna. I'm so sorry that they caught you. So sorry.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Joe at rt.ie. Darren Morrison. Darren, you contacted us about your near-death experience. Jane Seymour spoke about this last night on the meaning of life. Tell us, Darren, you're watching the interview and it brought back a memory for you. What was that memory?
I do, yeah, I did. Well, I've been sick now for 30 years. But when I was watching the interview last night, it did remind me of the time when I went through exactly the same thing that Jane went through.
Yeah.
I was in St. Vincent's Hospital at the time, and I had an ulcer, which was caused by active bleeding in my stomach, and I had a large abscess because I had a pinhole perforation in the colon because it was densely adhered to adhesion. So that tore, and I had a major hemorrhage.
Mm-hmm.
So during the hemorrhage, I was in the ward, and lying down on my bed, and a nurse was coming around. I wanted to get up, so I stood up, and I started vomiting blood.
Mm.
And as I fell, I grabbed onto the nurse, basically, and used her as an anchor, and I basically died. So,
yeah.
as Jane was saying then, I found myself in the white light.
The white light.
Very, very white, very peaceful, very white light. Wasn't afraid. Like, there's no fear in it whatsoever. I knew where it was because, you know, you hear of it growing up your whole life. You hear the white light. Everybody talks about it, but some people think you're only making it up. But no, I was there, and I was only 23 at the time. And
you're saying you were very peaceful, very calm. You saw this white light. I think Jane Seymour, didn't she speak about it? She felt like she was hovering above, looking down at herself. Did you get that experience?
No. I didn't see a white light. I was actually in the whole room around me. Everything was white.
You're in the white light.
Yeah, and. Do you know, like when you're in the airport, there's a travelator that just goes, a floor that moves.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So
level.
It was like a floor that moves, and I was traveling deeper into the white light.
Okay.
And I knew what it was, that I knew where I was going. I said, if I continue along there, I'm going to die. I said, I've got to go backwards.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was able to think for myself. I knew exactly where I was. There was. Didn't feel scared. I wasn't being threatened or anything like that, but I started taking steps backwards and pushing backwards on my heels. And
you were, what are you, you're saying you're pushing backwards to life?
No, away from the life.
No, to life, L-I-F-E,
oh,
sorry,
to
the
life.
Phone line.
Yeah. I was pushing, I said to myself, no, I'm not going to die today, I'm going to fight this. And... Oh. I pushed myself backwards, even though the floor was trying to bring me forward.
Okay, and you did get backwards, obviously.
So
stay there, Darren, because Mary Morris has contacted us. Mary, you also had a close call.
You could say that.
Yeah, tell us.
Very, very
well,
close
call,
yeah.
It's great that you're able to say it. Now, yeah, tell us what happened.
4 days after giving birth to quadruplets, I went into cardiorespiratory arrest. And that's all I remember then for a few weeks.
And did you, when the quads were born?
Yes.
Were they concerned about your health?
No, not a bit.
Obviously, quads are a challenge.
You could say that, and still are.
Yeah, of course.
Basically, what you could say is before they were born, I did have a cough. And they couldn't do anything about it. And they said they were going to do an X-ray when the babies were born, just to check, see what was going on. But obviously, when they were born, all, you know, attention was turned to them, understandably, because they were in the NICU unit.
Yeah,
and I was there, like, you know, just let recover. But I noticed, kind of as the hours went by, I felt I was getting weaker and weaker.
Mm-hmm.
And then a doctor was called to see me, and unfortunately, of no help to me. And the nurses were outstanding, to say the very least. And then there was an anaesthetist who knew by me things weren't right. And only for her, I wouldn't be here, because I eventually was able to get enough oxygen or air in my lungs to be able to say to her, for God's sake, do something. I always remember saying that.
Yeah.
And the next thing I remember is that when I came to, when I woke up, was I saw the photograph of the babies on the side of the cot that I was in, like a bed with side rails. And that's when I knew I was after having the babies.
And how long had you been out for? How long had you been?
In full, we say 3 weeks.
And what was
when
it?
I went across from one hospital to the other hospital, I was taken off the intubator just to see what way things were. And then, unfortunately, the same thing started happening again. So they were straight away, they put me back on the intubator, or on the...
You're in an induced coma?
Yes, okay. Thank you.
And do you remember anything from the coma?
Funnily enough, I do. The one thing I remember, and it was like it was real to me, my cousin brought me Tina. She was very, very good to my husband, and she stayed with him in the hospital at times, just, you know, as support for him, because it was a tough situation. Your wife is in one hospital, you have four new babies in another, and you don't think your wife's going to pull through, because all indicators didn't look good. And Tina, we had a concert booked to go to see Neil Diamond, and Tina brought me a CD, and she said to me, you can learn all the words. And in my mind, but I actually thought it had happened.
Okay.
I replied back to her, "Ha! I know all the words," and I kind of gave a laugh. But it turned out that I was actually still in an induced coma, but I could hear her. But in my mind, I answered her. But we only discovered that afterwards.
Okay, but could you hear Neil Diamond songs?
No, but I could hear Tina.
Okay, but but you weren't responding to her.
I was responding in my mind.
In their mind, exactly. She saw no difference.
Oh, absolutely not.
Yeah.
No, because I was intubated and in an induced coma.
So when you came out of the coma after 3 weeks, after your Neil Diamond coma, when you saw the photograph, did you know who you were looking at? The four children, your four babies. Did you know what you were looking at?
Funnily enough, because of everything I'd been through, I was very kind of just running with it, because, like, when you're pregnant with four babies, you just deal with every day as it comes, and since then. And so when I came to, I remember just opening my eyes and seeing, I remember looking and trying to count, oh, there's four. Oh, I must have had them. Oh, they must be mine.
And
that was literally the realization, kind of, what's going on?
When did you know you were having four?
It started when we were pregnant. And then we had an early scan because some of my blood levels were very high. And then they queried maybe twins.
Yeah.
And my husband even said, God, wouldn't it be great if it was twins? And I absolutely ate them. And I said, if you think I'm staying at home looking after babies, you've got another thing coming, because I loved my job. And then they brought us back just to check again, and they confirmed triplets.
Okay.
And then after that, I had a bit of a scare, and I was rested for a week or two and brought back in and checked again. And that's when they discovered four.
Four heartbeats.
That was on a Thursday. And on the Monday, I rang the consultant, and I just, crying down the phone, I went, I'm not having any more scans unless you can guarantee me there's no more. So they couldn't guarantee me anything when I was going down for the section.
What age are they now?
They are now 19 years
old.
Well done.
It's like four, like we have having 176 year old, four 19s, four 19s. Now, Mary, any long term effects?
I have a 3-day memory. I say it to people, they laugh and go, "Oh, I know exactly what you mean."
What does that mean?
That means anything over 3 days would be, we say, long term memory, and then I don't remember it.
Okay.
So it has to be something, it's like, as the way I describe it, it's like a pebble hitting a very large rock. If you keep going, eventually it'll make an indent. So if I have to try keep remembering something, I have to keep reminding myself and reminding myself, and eventually I may remember. But like, if I met you in the street today, and then I met you in next week or the week after, and you go, sure, I met you last week, I'll be there going, you did?
Yeah.
But you get very good at kind of bluffing your way out of situations.
But it's a 3-day memory. Is that not very awkward?
No. Well, it's like everything. You can make it awkward. Or you can decide, well, it is what it is. Just get on with it.
Okay.
I'm alive. I've got my children.
Yeah,
I was able to bring them up. You know,
but do you,
you
remember,
can either make the best of it or the worst of it.
But do you remember your kids' your children? Your children's birthdays or milestones?
The birthdays, yes.
Oh,
because I'm always reminded. And kind of different things I won't remember. You know, I have them on my phone. I live by my phone.
Oh, okay.
My
phone is my memory, as such.
So everything is put into the phone. Wedding anniversaries, birthdays, appointments, you name it, it's in the phone.
Yeah. That helps. That helps a lot. Okay. And can you remember people?
No, unfortunately. So, because I was with my husband one day and he goes, remember you met so-and-so, such-so place? He was trying to hint at me to see could I remember. And I'm there going, yes, yes, oh, now I remember you now. Yeah, yeah. I didn't. But it's easier than trying to go, no, I haven't a clue who you are.
Yeah. And by the way, when you said to your husband when you were told you were having two, you actually had four babies.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible, absolutely incredible, and well done. And when you said to him, he said, "Brilliant, great." But and you said, "Hang on, I'm not spending my life."
Did you ever eat your words?
Every day.
I ate mine.
Every day I have to. Okay, Mary, good health. That's an incredible story. An incredible story. Mary Morrison, Dan and Darren Morrison, thank you both. Joe at RTE.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
I didn't know you were called NDE's near-death experiences. Tom Williams. Tom, good afternoon. When was your near-death experience? What age were you?
Hi, Joe. I was 22, Joe.
Yeah.
I was trekking in Nepal. I was backpacking around the world at the time.
Okay.
I was trekking in Nepal, and I was struck down by malaria, basically, Joe, one day.
Right.
We didn't know what it was at first because I don't really know anything about malaria. It's a bit like getting the flu, Joe, and then it... so you feel okay and then you get struck down again.
Okay.
But when some people passed and saw me sitting on the ground, and it was actually a doctor from the UK who was trekking as well, and he told my girlfriend at the time, I think he's got malaria. So what they did was they tried to get a helicopter in to get me out because it was obviously quite serious, but you know, given the conditions there, the weather, the mountains, it changes very quickly, blah blah. So they basically put me on the back of a donkey and they took me back down to where it came from, which was the second city in Nepal, Pokhara. Because, you know, in Nepal, everything's taken up by Sherpas, you know, on their back and everything.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah. How long did it take you to get down with malaria on the back of a donkey?
Yeah, so it took about 5 days.
Wow.
So I got back to the valley floor, which was the you know, you're basically the Himalayas there. And then you're in the valley floor to go back to Pokhara. So they put me in the back of a jeep then for the last kind of hour to get me back to what was a UN field hospital at the time. But I just remember lying in the back and I was so wrecked from the malaria. It's, you know, it's an unbelievable illness to get. Body was wrecked. And I just remember thinking, I just can't do this anymore, and kind of giving up. Anyway, the next thing I remember, I woke up in this field hospital.
Right.
There was about 6 beds in there, you know, and there was a couple of international nurses. I think one was French, female French doctor, and a female German doctor. And then the next thing I know, I was just gone. I was gone. I was up in the corner of the room. It sounds like a cliche and, you know, ridiculous stereotype, but and I just remember looking back down at my body, and the doctors were around me working on me. Nurses were running around. I see everything completely clearly. You get super conscious of things.
Yeah.
And the next thing I kind of remember, I looked to the left, and then I was moving towards this light. And the closer I got, obviously it was becoming brighter. It was like kind of being in a tunnel. But I felt very peaceful. It was absolutely fine. I didn't feel scared in any way. And, you know, I'm not a religious person, Joe, or anything like that. So, I remember feeling the presence of my grandmother,
okay,
who had died, and I was very close to her when I was younger, very, very close to her. A feeling of great peace and everything. And then I was suddenly given this decision, the choice about whether I wanted to basically cross over, I suppose you would call it, or stay where I was. And I distinctly remember thinking, no, it's not my time. I need to go back. Mm-hmm. And
did your granny speak?
No, it was more of a presence that I felt.
Okay,
You know, you kind of have that feeling with your grandparents, you know, when you're young.
Yeah.
I was very, very close to her. I was, you know, it was when she died, I couldn't go to the funeral. I was so upset and stuff like that. You know, I was probably 18, 19 when she died, you know. And then the next thing, it was like a bang, and, you know, it was like a jolt in my body, and I was back in my body, and then I was aware of all the doctors and around me again, the nurse and staff, the other people.
What an experience.
It was amazing. And so they said, I was like, what happened? My girlfriend was there at the time. She was in the hospital with me. She said, you clinically died for 2 minutes, you know, and they brought you back. They brought you back. Then I had to obviously have a couple of weeks recovery. They sent me back. I had to go back to Sri Lanka to, you know, build myself up again, because I got over the illness that night. The fever broke, and I was okay again. After a few weeks, you know. But
I don't know what you heard, Darren. Sorry, earlier on, Darren talking about the experience. Him was on one of those moving pedestrian what's it called? They're not elevators, escalators. Travelators, sorry, don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he could feel himself trying to push back to go backwards on it. And that was him. He felt fighting to become alive again. Did you have any of those sensations when you were 2 minutes?
No. It was almost as I was given a choice, you know. I was given a choice to decide what I wanted to do. And I distinctly remember thinking, no, they're kind of, thanks very much, but I need to go back, you know. I need to do more with my life, you know. It was really peculiar. And I never spoke to anybody about this for years and years because, you know, I didn't want people to think I was a nutcase or anything, you know. And as I say, I'm not particularly religious one way or the other.
Okay.
But I heard a documentary, but similar to what you guys have been talking about. There was a documentary on Radio 4 when I was living in the UK. Probably that was about, must have been 15, 20 years after this happened to me. And I thought, and immediately I thought, Jesus, that's a familiar thing. That's exactly what happened to me, kind of thing, you know. And I've read about this before and listened to other people talking about it since. So I know it's something quite common, you know. I know people have looked at it as probably maybe chemicals in the brain and what happens to you when that, you know, the body shuts down or whatever. But
there seems to be a consistency, like, the Jane Seymour, which is on the player, but the program's called The Meaning of Life, where she talks so vividly about her death experience while she was making a movie. Anyway, Tom Williams, thanks indeed. Tom Williams in Letterkenny in Donegal. That's another good news story. Micheál McKeown was on with us, 10 days ago, last Friday week. Micheál, I think it was Friday. Micheál, good afternoon. You had discovered after 80 years, you discovered you had a full sister and she was due to meet you this past Friday. Did it happen, Micheál?
It did indeed, Joe. An absolute wonderful experience. This was an out-of-body experience for me as well.
Okay.
It was brilliant. Met my sister. She's exactly as I expected her to be.
And this is the first time for you to see her in the flesh?
Yeah.
And she came to your home place?
She came. She's staying with us for a couple of weeks and has a son with her. He's unfortunately heading back today, but it's been brilliant. We've been meeting all her first cousins. All so far, I think 25.
Okay.
And there's more on the way because we're heading to Galway at the weekend and there's another 25 over there.
Incredible. And Patricia Mitchell, your sister, and you told a story to us. It was a very, very sad story. Your mother and father.
Well, indeed, yeah.
Your mother, as I said, they fell pregnant before they were married. They did get married, but still she went to a mother and baby home in Belfast, didn't give the correct name, and Patricia was adopted and had been searching for years. Patricia Mitchell. Patricia, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. Lovely to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. Congratulations. You were lost and have been found. Micheál was lost and have been found. Well, what's it been like the last few days, Patricia?
It's been absolutely amazing. All my life I've been looking for my mother and trying to find my background. And then 18 months ago, whoa, I found everybody. I found all this wonderful Micheál and Murphy background. Okay. And it's wonderful to be here.
And were you nervous going up to meet them in County Louth the other day?
I was, to start with, yes, okay. Yes. Because, I mean, it's such a bit, I didn't know what to expect. Okay. They didn't know what to expect of me.
Yes, yes.
And it was absolutely amazing.
So, how many people have you met over the weekend? Many of your close relations have you met over the weekend for the first time?
Okay, right. Well, all of them, obviously. But yesterday we went to meet my sister's family, who are the Murphys.
Okay.
All together, they had a big family reunion, 18 nephews and nieces,
wow,
plus all their children, plus so many cousins. And it's so amazing, considering that 2 months ago, I had 3 siblings in the world.
And how many relations did you know you had 2 months ago?
2 months ago? Well, no... 2 years ago,
of course,
I didn't know I had. I didn't know I had any other apart from my son and 2 grandchildren.
Oh, that's so. So you had 3 relations up to the
that's
time.
That's right. Yes. Yes.
And now from Friday last, you've started me. You there must be hundreds, Patricia.
Oh, for goodness sake! I think the Murphys are everywhere. And sorry, the McCoons and the Murphys. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're off to Galway next week to meet my mother's side of the family. And some more cousins.
Wow.
So it's mind-boggling, really.
You're going to have some Christmas card lists this year, Patricia.
Oh, my goodness, really, yes.
And Patricia, what was it like when you discovered? I know you searched for you knew you were adopted, and you were adopted up north, and you became a very accomplished viola player and a singer as well.
Yeah.
But you were always looking to find out what happened and your parents or whatever. But when you discovered that your mother and father were actually married, and went on to have other children. How did you hear that in your head when you got that news?
Well, it was absolutely amazing because all my life, from my birth certificate, I had my mother's name.
Okay.
And I was never able to trace her, never thought about a father because it said housekeeper and I thought, well, my father could be anybody. And when I found out that I had proper parents who'd actually been married, and the whole story has just been mind-blowing. Mm-hmm. And to find my brother, he's an amazing character, as I think most people know.
Yeah.
And the whole family, well, it's just the whole thing. They've taken to me, they've made me feel welcome, and it's just astounding.
And have you noticed any similarities between yourself and your brother?
Oh, yes, a lot. A lot, yes. Even yesterday, apparently my sister and I, there's a year between us. She died on 45 years ago.
Ah.
But the family, they say the resemblance is amazing. Even to the fact that I had a piece of cake yesterday and I picked it up, they said exactly as my sister would have done. I broke it into pieces and they said, just look at that. It's like Anya. And the whole similarity is just amazing.
Oh, that's incredible. That's incredible.
It is.
And Micheál, have you noticed things of Patricia as well, the similarities?
Oh, Joe, I have indeed, a lot of things. On our side of the family, one thing I have noticed is we're colourblind.
Okay.
We are?
Even though I'm an artist, I'm colourblind.
Okay.
But things like that, and another amazing thing that happened was when Patricia's son, Paul, came in, and he came into our conservatory, and I had a book just casually passed. It's a book I'm reading.
Okay.
And it was Troy by Stephen Fry.
Okay.
And he said, I'm reading that book. And I said, well, I'm halfway through it, and it's great. He says, I'm halfway through it as well.
Brilliant.
So there seemed to be these miraculous things happening. And
okay.
I've just I'm now looking at Patricia as if she's my late sister Anya. You're very like her, red hair. Yeah. You know, and the same idiosyncrasies, same similarities, everything.
Well, it's brilliant that even after 80 years you found each other, hold each other close and hold each other warm.
Yeah.
Brother and sister, Patricia Mitchell, thank you so much, Patricia. Pace yourself over the next few days, Patricia. Don't be overwhelmed by all the relatives. Take your time. And you have a lot of catching up to do. And Micheál McKeown, brother and sister, thank you both and congratulations on that wonderful, wonderful story. Today's producer was Lisa Marie Berry and Ray Darcy's next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia eSoul. Going electric? Stop wondering and start driving. The Kia eSoul with a range up to 452 kilometres.
1850 715 815. Stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.